observer, and you, sir, you've been on West Cliff Drive lately.
Yeah, I've been down on West Cliff, and I noticed there are campers, not just people living in vans, but families living in campers. And one actually asked me this evening, do you know a place where me and my family can park for the night to sleep? And I didn't know of a place that would safe for them.
It is actually true that they passed a slight loosening of a law earlier in the spring, that said if a business gives you written permission, up to two vehicles can park in the parking lot of a business. And it has been true since 1995 that up to three vehicles can park in the parking lot of a church. But very few churches are a part of that program, again with written permission. It is also legal 3 days out of the month to sleep in a vehicle in a driveway of a residence with the residence and the owner's permission. But again, that's 3 days of a month. So we're talking little, you know, tiny exceptions that don't really help the majority of people.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. There are a lot of people that, due to circumstance, the economy or whatever happened to them, that have families, that have children, and for whatever reason, they're living in campers, and they need a safe place. I mean, if you can't rest, if you can't get a good night's sleep, the probability you're feeling good enough to get out, go look for some kind of work, look for something to do, it just makes it tougher on the entire family. And I feel bad for the children, mostly for the children. They don't have any part in where they are. You know, I mean, and for whatever reason,
they're innocent victims.
They're innocent victims, and there should be a place for them. Somewhere outside the city limits, maybe, but just a safe area. And if it needs to be enforced that you get there at 11 o'clock and you have to leave by 6 a.m., I don't think those people would have a problem with that at all. As a matter of fact, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning after a good night's sleep, maybe something to eat, would certainly prepare them better for looking for work and being a little more productive and helping themselves and their family.
Now,
and
the community. Are you a Santa Cruz local yourself?
I'm a local, yeah.
How long you lived here?
About 15 years.
So you've seen this situation every year pretty much developing.
I have.
What do you do with a city council that doesn't want to do anything about it? We're planning to do a protest downtown to bring the issue into the media focus.
I really don't have an answer to it. I think that, I suppose that what you're doing, protesting uniformly and in compliance with the law, I think is the way to go. I'm a Vietnam vet. If it weren't for the young people protesting the war and getting their message across that it was wrong, I might not be here today.
I'm glad you are.
So am I.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, 2.5 hours of Civil Rights for the Poor, as we do it every week, and in fact twice a week on Thursdays. We're with you from 6 to 8 in the evening. This is a community radio station, so we encourage you to call in. You can reach us on air at 427-3772, and we will put you on the air. You can talk about anything you want, though we'd like you to try to get into the topics we're talking about, civil rights for poor people, and respond to issues that you hear raised on the air. But if you have your own issues that you think bear on any of these subjects, please, please call in at 427-3772 and let us know. If you want to reach us off air, you can try 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. You'll get an answering machine, but you can leave a message, and we'll get back to you after the show is over. Or you can try to reach us on air and tell us you want to be off air, but you'll, of course, go on air when we pick up the phone. So that's what's happening with the call-ins, and we hope that you join the show because, really, it's the voices out there that make it much more interesting for all of us and give us the really needed input from the community so we're not just talking to ourselves here in the studio, things that we already agree on. Last speaker here, the last tape you just heard, was from a protest about 2 months ago, I should say a table downtown across from the Cinema 9, where we were gathering signatures and volunteers in hopes of a Christmas season of protest when merchants downtown are most vulnerable. And we focus on the merchants because They are really a powerhouse in this town. The Downtown Association has had significant impact on the city council, particularly after the earthquake. And indeed, they prompted the worst, the first anti-homeless laws about sitting and spare changing and having a table downtown that passed in 1994 and produced a police riot in May of that year. That's the sit near a store ordinance that finally came out of it that makes it a $162 crime to sit within 10 feet of a store window or entrance, 50 feet of an ATM or 4 feet of a telephone or drinking fountain. Preposterous laws that have nothing to do with real health and safety concerns, but are simply there to placate the merchants. And you see the same kind of process happening with the expulsion of Robert Steffen, the homeless man with the black and white umbrella. Perhaps you've seen him downtown on Pacific in front of the old Cooper House area that's now the new Crapper House, as I call it, at Church and Pacific. He's sitting there. He was evicted from the bench near Bunny Shoes by an injunction from Margaret Payne, who is the owner of Bunny's, Bunny herself. Apparently she gave him a hop, kick, and a jump and had him roll right down the street, and Judge Stevens rolled over for that one, though she had no allegations of violence or threats from this man at all. And we're going to be hearing more of her interview this show. We played some of the interview we had with Margaret Payne last show. We're going to play the rest of it, plus we're going to play Charlie Stevens, interestingly enough, Judge Stevens' son, who's now a public defender, talk about the case he defended where Robert Stevens spent 3 months in jail, on different occasions actually, 1 month periods in jail, awaiting a trespass trial. And he finally got his trespass trial. Where was he trespassing? Was he trespassing at a nuclear facility, or possibly rampaging through City Hall, breaking windows, or maybe, you know, invading a private home? No, he was sleeping outside on the porch of the Homeless Services Center after he'd been denied access to the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program because of disagreements with the management over their, what he called, make-work policies and hostility by personnel there toward him. So he was actually arrested, might say, told he could not sleep in the property under pain of arrest by the very authorities that are supposed to be providing emergency shelter in this town for homeless people. I mean, it's, of course, the supreme irony, but really, it's the bottom line, because the bottom line to homeless people is, join the show program. If you can't join the show program, get out of town or get out of sight. That's sort of the answer. Actually, with me here today, I have a man who has been homeless, I'm sure. We got a number of people in that category, some of whom may or may not speak, depending on their preferences. And David, why don't you introduce yourself? And you've got another issue, of course, that has to do with an incredibly abusive arrest that you're going to be talking about that happened just yesterday at Kmart. But before we do that, you've been around. You've just heard me describe what's happened to Robert Steffen and this eviction from the bench and this arrest at the Homeless Services Center. Any reaction to that?
It's a pretty regular program for the police, isn't it?
Are you yourself a person who's been homeless?
For about 5 years.
And this is in Santa Cruz?
Right.
And have you had problems with sleeping tickets or anything of that sort during that period?
I've only had my truck broken into one time by one of the city cops. He broke into my window because I wouldn't answer to the door knocks or slams. He was just slamming my door around and banging on it with his flashlight. And he broke into the window and caught me in there and made me move my truck that night. But I did mention to him that he just committed breaking and entering. So he shined his flashlight in my face so I couldn't see his name tag, jumped in his car and left. Then I didn't get bothered after that again.
So you didn't even know the name of this, but the man was in a blue uniform?
He was an officer, yeah.
He didn't give you a ticket, he just broke your window?
No, he was going along the street just telling the campers in the buses and the vans and stuff to move on. And when he came to mine, I didn't move because the law says if you don't answer and they can't enter, and if they enter, they're breaking the law. And I hope you guys know that.
Breaking the law, but then they break your windows, man. What are you going to do?
I don't know. If you go down and complain to the police idiot board, they just take turns making airplanes out of them, I guess. I don't know what they do with that stuff.
Actually, we're going to be talking about them, too. They have a hearing tomorrow. They're only one of the month, and I'm afraid that really kind of describes what happens to complaints. They are routinely dismissed by the CPRB. I mean, after, of course, elaborate bureaucratic process, which, of course, is, and they spend, what, $70,000, $80,000 a year to do this. When did this incident happen where you were, they broke your window, or this police officer broke your window?
When?
Yeah.
Probably about, I think it was back 96 or 97. I was doing a lot of camping in business areas, kind of close to downtown, but not really. And then I would try to move before the schools or businesses opened, and he caught me like about one or two at night, you know.
Not just you, apparently, but also other people were also doing that. You said that they moved on, but you attempted to simply maintain a low profile, and this police officer wouldn't let you do that.
Yeah, he wouldn't let me sleep, and he decided to break in. And
would you recognize him if you saw him again?
Probably not. It was dark, and I couldn't tell who he really was. I didn't get the license number, and I didn't bother going down and complaining about it to the review board because I don't think it was even around then. I think it was just starting or something. I didn't know about it.
Well, actually, very few people do know about the review board. That's according to a recent show on the board from Voices from the Village, which is going to be, by the way, to jump to another quick subject, having two, actually not Voices from the Village, but Channel 71, which shows Voices from the Village, will also be having a show this week, Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock in the evening on Shoulder Tap, which is a topic we've covered here, which is the new police law, because it was proposed by Chief Belcher and is now being championed by the majority of the city council. Everybody but Christopher Crone voted for it at the last meeting, which says if a youngster or a college student who's under 21 asks anybody for a beer, to purchase a beer, I presume it's somebody who's over 21, but maybe it's even somebody under 21. I'm not entirely clear on that. But if you make a request to someone over 21 to get you a beer, that itself is a crime. In other words, the person doesn't have to do a thing to go get you a beer. There doesn't have to be, you know, any alcohol touched or addressed or negotiated for by that person with anybody else. Just the speech act becomes criminal. It seems to me that's like saying, I want you to go kill so-and-so, and then nothing else happens. And that we're making that a crime. That's exactly what's being done, except that it's being done for young people under 21, and it is being done, I think there is the good evidence indicates, at the behest of merchants who simply want to use this to drive people away from loitering in front of their stores, 7-Elevens and so forth. Now, of course, the concern they're raising in that has to do with alcohol, you know, and it's seriously bad effects on all of us. Alcohol is probably, next to tobacco, the most dangerous drug in this country and damaging for all kinds of reasons, both in terms of its physical effects and the psychologically violence-producing effects that alcohol has on most people, or on many people, certainly. But we're going to talk about that later. I'm going to return again after my long sway as I go through these kind of wraps. There is a city council meeting coming up. And that council meeting is going to be happening 2 days from today, on Tuesday. They have two sessions, 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And there's some items on the agenda that are of interest. There's an item in the afternoon about Robert Steffen, the man we were talking about, the man barred from the bunny's bench, as we call it. He had put in a claim for $25 for damages. I mean, the guy is pretty modest. He's running for president, by the way. You may have seen him with his little cart and his little sign. And his There Is No God is also apparently running for most unpopular man in town among the religious community. But, you know, he's doing that. He's putting a $25 claim for an incident that happened. And people want to address that or talk about Robert Steffen can come to the afternoon session at 3 o'clock. Actually, in the closed litigation session of City Council, which none of us are allowed to go to at 1 or 2 o'clock, they're going to be talking about another claim by Robert Steffen. And it could have been for something that happened at the Homeless Services Center. I'm not sure what that earlier claim was for. And for a claim by Steve Argue. And I believe that claim by Steve Argue has to do with, I could be wrong about this, an incident that happened, not the famous punch in the chops of Lefebvre as he twisted the arm of the Canadian woman Julianne, who had a babe in arms at the May 22nd protest, such as to frighten protesters nearby into believing that he was going to break her arm. Not that incident, but rather the incident on November 12th, I believe it was the 12th or the 13th, I'm told it was the 13th, where Steve Argue was trying to sell the newspaper Street Spirit in front of New Leaf Market, as he is legally entitled to do, and Officer Garner, or Grim Grip Garner, as I call him, came by and told him he had to have a license, and Augie said, no, you're wrong, get away from me. And Garner persisted, wrestled him to the ground, smashed his face into the ground, causing a gouge in his face, then had him arrested for a misdemeanor and a felony, I think assault on an officer and resisting arrest, and then held him in jail for 4 days. The jail held him for 4 days in isolation. And at the end of that time, of course, he was released with no charges whatsoever. And the whole incident just sort of disappeared down the black hole. And there's that claim coming to city council. Again, that'll be on Tuesday, that's December 14th. And that's going to be heard in closed session, so we won't know about that. But people who want to come and talk about it can. And that's usually at the evening session when you talk. You actually can talk at the afternoon session on items on the agenda. And on the evening session, you can talk on items not on the agenda, during what's called the public comment or oral communications period, which goes from 7 to 7:30 or so. And you get 3 minutes. Who knows? Maybe you'll get more, maybe you'll get less under the new mayor, Keith. Do I call him Sugar Brain Sugar? I don't know. I don't want to insult the man. His behavior, unfortunately, speaks for itself. I have actually a flyer here which talks about that, because an item that's not going to be on the agenda is the item that the Homeless Issues Task Force, which is the $10,000 group set up by Sugar and Crone and Byers and Fitzmaurice, the new council members, the liberal council members back in I guess it was March, when they decided they wanted to do nothing about the sleeping ban except lower the punitive fine from $162 to $54, as though even a working person could pay $54 a night to sleep. No, they were saying, we're just going to do this kind of a complete and ineffectual political sop sort of thing, a sort of a bone they threw to people. They also implemented this Homeless Issues Task Force. And the Homeless Issues Task Force, surprisingly, we all called it the task farce, or some of us did, saying, you know, this is they're throwing all the activists on this task force so they won't do protests or won't do anything effective. And in fact, I suspect that's what they were doing. And it's traditional, so we shouldn't really even get excited, because we know that's what they're doing. But the task force got tired of this, and they passed resolution after resolution asking for real changes, and they were ignored. Ignored to the extent that they couldn't even get their information on the city council as a report, in the same way that, say, the police department has a report, or other commissions get their stuff reported and put on the city council packets. Not even for the agenda discussions, but just for the public to see if they want to look at the agenda packets. And they finally got a quick 5-minute presentation by Mayor Byers, finally, after she was embarrassed into it. Byers said at that time that she would not allow either the city council or the public to respond to anything the Homeless Issues Task Force said. And so, on Monday, about a week ago, the Homeless Issues Task Force looked at the increase in violence against homeless people. It's been going up in the last couple months. We've got a total of, I would say, between 40 and 50 assaults on homeless people since the first of the year. Trollbuster types assaults, or just generalized assaults by young skinhead types downtown. And some of them have, you know, there's actually been one conviction. Aaron Birch has been convicted of doing that against Joe Barker. Anyway, the Homeless Issues Task Force found, we need you to suspend the sleeping and camping ordinances and give yourself time to set up safe zones, but that's what we need this winter, and we need it now. And the next day, they assigned two or three people to go to talk to Mayor Keith Sugar, who met with him the next morning and told them, no soap, I don't have the votes, go out and find yourself some money, and maybe we'll get an extra armory bus. Now, the armory takes about 100 people. That's their stated capacity this year, according to Ken Cole, the Homeless Services Center. That's 100 out of 500 to 1,500 people who are homeless in Santa Cruz, or who are living in their own vehicles illegally. They are homeless technically because they haven't got the right to live in even their own shelter. So that being the case, the armory, and you add to it every other shelter program that's an emergency shelter program, you get about 200 beds at most, probably about 175. That's the floors of churches and the armory together. That's less than 20% of all people who are sleeping outside. And what did Sugar say? He said, I'm not even going to put this issue on the agenda. My $10,000 Homeless Issues Task Force says this is an emergency item. They come to me the day after they pass it and say, put it on the agenda because you're going on vacation. The winter is coming up. Violence is increasing. We had 4 deaths, several of them through heroin overdoses in the last three months, I beg your pardon. We need you to take action. We need you to lead the community, to at least discuss it. Yeah, you might be voted down. Yeah, Mayor Byers and Mike Rotkin and Cynthia Matthews will give their usual speeches. Yeah, maybe you will be voted down, but the community will hear the issues. And the community will eventually respond to this if you give them a chance, if you raise the issue in a public place. Keith Sugar said no, not going to do it. This is the most liberal member of the city council telling the homeless they can freeze their asses off all winter, and all they're going to hear from city council and from him is silence. And we see this again in today's Sentinel. If you read the Sunday Sentinel, there's a kind of a puff piece on Keith Sugar as the new mayor. The word homeless doesn't appear once there, just as it doesn't appear and didn't appear in his coronation speech, in his inaugural speech, which he made last month when he became mayor. Homeless has now become a word you don't talk about, just like if you try to use police officers' names at the Citizens Police Review Board now at the public mic. Arnie Leff, the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, and you'll find this out if you go there tomorrow at 5:30, which is when they regularly meet every month on Monday, second Monday of the month, 5:30 at City Hall. You try to use a police officer's name, and he may well shut you down. He did that. He tried to do that to two of us. He succeeded with one person, James Ney, last month. With myself, I said, no, you can get the police to arrest me. I think that will really show what the power dynamic is here, where the police review board is censoring, at the behest of the police department, names of police officers who were trying to get out to the community in very specific contexts, who are guilty of police abuses, which the CPRB seems to have no will to deal with. They don't. They have the power, in a certain sense, because they could hold a public hearing on any of these matters at any time. Yet in their 5 years, and even for the last year under the new chair, Arnie Leff, appointed by, I don't know, was it Fitzmaurice, I think? You know, the new members, all those new wonderful people that we saw elected, no public hearings. No public hearings on the issues of any complaints that have come up. And, of course, we have the latest scandal downtown, which is the fact that they're making confidential the so-called independent report on what happened on May 22nd when police attacked a protest, a boisterous but peaceful protest against the war in Yugoslavia and against Democratic Party hacks raising money for this, money for the bombs, but in essence, money for the politicians who support the bombs. So, having run through that long rant, and of course done too much ranting and raving, I'm going to encourage people to call the city council and do this if you can during the show. It's a very simple number. It's a 24-hour message line, 420-5020. So it's 420-5020, pretty easy to remember. And just ask to leave a message for Christopher Crone and or Keith Sugar and or any other member of the council you want and say, put your own Homeless Issues Task Force emergency resolution on the agenda December 14th. Thank you very much. And call me back if you're not going to do it. Do that message, 420-5020. And the idea being, not that they're going to do it, they'll say, oh, it's too late. The agenda has closed on Thursday or Friday. Actually, it doesn't close until the very moment of the city council meeting if it's an emergency item. So ask them to put it on as an emergency item. We want them to know that the community has spoken to them and they have turned a deaf ear. And then what happens next is their responsibility, because they won't allow the usual and the proper political channels to operate. And therefore, we have to use whatever channels we can to get the message out to the public. In Seattle, we saw this mass protest in the streets, and I'm not saying that's going to happen in Santa Cruz. I certainly don't have thousands of protesters ready to come to town. But I think it depends a lot on what happens and how people feel about it. I think that Seattle-style peaceful protest would be a real eye-opener, and I think that people here in Santa Cruz who've gone to Seattle have learned how to protest. And maybe, just maybe, they will not just consider issues that are distant and go to venues that are far away, but they will take action in their own backyard. That would be such a refreshing thing. Well, we have a lot of leftover stuff from the last show. But before we do that, with us today, as I said before, we have
Dave.
And Dave, you gave me a call last night because in the course of what you normally do, which is you're a petitioner, you, in order to make a living, you register people and get them to sign up for initiative petitions of different kinds. And there are a number of people who do this. You found the normal course of your work and business interrupted.
In a way, yeah. I had been working at Kmart off and on for about a year and a half, 2 years. And the
in the Kmart parking lot, you mean?
Actually, right near the front door. And I had actually been assaulted by other petitioners who wanted to take that spot during good petitioning times, and the manager actually came out and protected me and had the police run off the other petitioners because he mentioned that I was probably one of the most polite petitioners he'd ever met or seen work. And unfortunately, yesterday, there wasn't room for me because I showed up at Kmart, and then after that, a group of people showed up for the Marines to collect toys. And I was there first, and that's kind of a usual thing. First person at a spot stays there.
First come, first serve sort of thing.
Right. I was on one side of the door, and on the other side was Salvation Army, and he was a pretty nice guy. He had his little boy out there ringing the bell, and the guy even came over and introduced himself to me, and he was really polite, and he even signed my petition, which, by the way, I did not even sign. It's about abortions, and it's a touchy subject for me, but I'm circulating it for people who are willing to go on the...
I mean, it's a money-making activity for you, and presumably, you know, it's something that people who are homeless, and you yourself are homeless, do to in order to make ends meet.
Yeah, I've had this petition for a couple of weeks now, and I've circulated around my friends, especially women, and most of the liberal women are totally opposed to this petition because it only makes more government control in a way. It's for making sure that any minors won't get an abortion unless the parents are notified by the physician. And I did pass that petition because I think it's a good petition, personally, because I have two teenage daughters. And also, I've been in the medical field for about 15 or 20 years.
But that's not really the issue, is it, Dave? What the validity of the petition isn't the question. The question is if you're right to circulate the petition unhindered by city authorities and by the people who run the shopping center.
Yeah, I was just pointing out that it's a touchy situation for me to pass back. Not a bad petition, but it's a very controversial one. And that was the only reason why I was explaining my...
Sure.
But so what happened was...
You're a bad boy for circulating a petition, but you have the right to do it, which I think is the point.
Well, you have to give people a choice. There's a petition out there, and if you don't like it, other people might. I passed it. And that's that. You know, it's not something... there is another petition that's being drawn up this weekend, and it's to bring down the three strikes law. It'll be on the street tomorrow. The bigwigs will have it. And by Tuesday, I will have it in my hand, and I will be looking for petitioners, especially petitioners who aren't afraid to go to Kmart. I think we should flood this man's life with the love that the petitioners have for the rights that we are trying to get other people to
let's go back. I agree with you, but let's go back to what happened to you so we can know what
going
on.
Here I am between Salvation Army and the Marines toy collectors, and apparently the one of the people, there were three adults, one went into the manager of Kmart and asked him to have me removed.
And from the Salvation Army or?
From the front of Kmart.
Right, but I mean, who was the individual? Was it some person connected with the...
Not Salvation Army. It was the people who were collecting toys from the Marines. I was taking up their space.
U.S. Marines or?
Yeah, U.S. Marines have people come
Marine
out.
Corps.
Yeah, they get these big 50-gallon garbage can things and people drop toys in it.
So the Marine Corps didn't want you there?
I guess not. You know, these didn't look like Marines to me, and I'm an ex-corpsman in the Navy anyway, so I would know one when they came up the street. They mostly looked like cops. But they're churchgoers, and they're very conservative. And
strangely enough, they probably support the petition you were circulating.
Probably do, you know. Most of the conservative people did actually want to sign it, mostly the older generation. And basically what happened was I was told I didn't have permission to stay there, and the other people who had priority, they had asked permission from the store. I told the manager that the state Supreme Court gave me permission, not the store owner or manager, and he went and called the police anyway. So the police came out and pulled me aside and made me pull out ID. I'm not even sure if that's legal because I was working at the time. And then he tried to talk down to me and intimidate me and force me to move on. And the questions that he had, I had answers for. And you know, he was asking me if I knew the law, and I said, "Of course I know the law. You're a law officer. You know the law. The Pruneyard decision of '79, the Pruneyard of Campbell, Pruneyard, allows petitioners to go where the public goes. The state Supreme Court allows that. And this particular officer decided that he was going to rewrite the law today. And he took my license and wouldn't give it back to me. And I told him, look, you're in the wrong, and you know it, and I'd like to have my license back, and he wouldn't. So I said, I'll be out here petitioning. When you're ready to get my license back, do it. So I went back and I continued to petition right in front of him. And he knew he was in the wrong, so he couldn't arrest me. So he called in some of his other friends. One was a sergeant. Then they decided that I was blocking what is known as the egress-ingress, which is inflow-outflow of the store. And this is not true because I practice the politeness that I try to perform on people when I'm doing this service. It's actually
what you're doing is you're doing a service, of course, for the people who are trying to get this thing on the ballot. You're getting paid, a certain amount of money per signature for it. But you're also engaging in the kind of public speech which is protected by the First Amendment's freedom of speech, freedom of the right to petition and to assemble to address grievances.
Right.
And it's also really a healthy part of the democratic process.
I feel fortunate to be one of these people, actually.
You'd be healthier if you were circulating your own petition, you know, and rather than being a part of a commercial venture. But the fact is, I see this as have political dimensions in more respects than one, because you're a homeless person who proceeds to try to use the First Amendment in this situation in order to survive. That's really what you're doing. It's not just, oh, gee, you can have a conversation in a coffee shop without being arrested. It's, are you going to make enough money to be able to, you know...
Right. Actually, I did
stay warm in the winter.
I did go on the street on Friday and yesterday to make a little bit of money, because I thought I was going to be able to wait it out until the other petition came out about this three strikes, which is coming out on Tuesday. They're going to bring three strikes down. Only people who have done violent crimes will get the three strikes. Anybody else would be able to be freed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't make it, so I had to do a little bit of petitioning just to feed myself. And I guess this is the karma that builds up when you do that kind of stuff. But I think it's karma for Kmart this time, because when they blatantly take it in their own hands to take away your freedom of speech, and of course I've worked there several times over the year and a half or 2 years I've been there, and this is going to come out, of course, well, then they're just asking for these taxpayers to give out tens of thousands of dollars to people who are working hard and not bothering anybody on lawsuits, and then the police walk away without any problems. And they're allowed to do this, I guess.
Now, I hear you feel very strongly about this, as you should, by the way. I felt rather outraged, as you know, when you called. I immediately put you in touch with an attorney who actually expressed an interest in the case. You yourself are, we haven't really concluded what happened. You were told, the cops told you were blocking ingress and egress. Did they tell you that the store had the right to regulate the time, place, and manner of your being there, and that they just wanted you to move down the road? Did they say because you're not moving down the road to another place, that was why they were arresting you? Or did they say you're blocking the area and interfering with the business to arrest you?
I said that I was blocking the traffic, which I wasn't. I usually stand in one spot, or if I move towards somebody, I move out of the way of the traffic. But basically, the guy came out and said, I don't have permission. And so he went and called the police because I told him I didn't need permission. And this is the same man who has complimented me on the way I do my petitioning, even though he mentioned, that's why I let you stay there. He didn't get the picture at that time. I didn't want to argue with him at the time that I have permission. He doesn't have to give me permission.
The Constitution gives you permission is what you're saying.
Right. So, you know, why I came on the radio today was to let you know that there's another police abuse that now the taxpayers are going to be paying. I was told by my coordinator last night when I called him that the civil rights lawyers aren't even available at this particular time. I have to wait for one to be available because there's so many civil rights being broken to petitioners, Costco, Home Depot, a few others. There's attacking petitioners. So there is an excellent petition hitting the street in a couple of days. And if you contact people at this station, I'll make sure I'll give you some petitions to work with too. If you need a few bucks and you're 18 and can register.
And you're not getting any money for doing that, by making those petitions available, right?
Oh, no. I want more petitioners. In fact, my coordinator from Salinas would like me to start as a co
coordinator up here so we can get another area, because the coordinator that's up here, Dan Cooper, doesn't treat his people properly. He shaves the money off and keeps it, and he did that to me a year ago during the Indian. So I don't want to work with him anymore, and I didn't want to work petitioning anymore until I found a decent coordinator. So
let me ask you about, again, this incident we're covering where you told the police, look, the Pruneyard decision allows me the right to be in this public space, in this public area. What was the police officer? There were one police officer, two? How many were there?
Well, at first one showed up, and he tried to...
There's a deputy, a sheriff's deputy?
Yeah, I think he was a two-striper, not a three-striper.
It was a brown uniformed person rather than a Capitola police officer?
Right. He was sheriff.
He was in the county sheriff's.
Yeah, he was sheriff. And he tried to convince me to move down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so did the other people when they showed up, the other officers. It was a sergeant. They said, you're going to have to move down the road. There's not enough room for you here. And I said, well, first of all, I was here first. And these people actually had to move over because they had so much stuff. And that it was blocking mine. And I said, you know, I was here first. And they said, well, we're here to get toys for the kids. And I showed her the petition. I said, I'm here to save lives, lady. I'm trying to get the law changed so that, you know, people aren't cut on by a physician who... I don't trust myself. I was in the medical field 20 years. I wouldn't want my daughter, I wouldn't want my dog under the knife unless I was there watching it, or at least...
So what did the police finally do, David?
So they tried to convince me to move down to Safeway, which is in the same parking lot, or further down, and I told them that wasn't appropriate. Mm-hmm. I was there first. I have a right. And they handcuffed me right in front of everybody. And as soon as I got in the police car... Strangely enough, the people that I was taking up so much of their space still didn't have enough space after I left, so they switched spots with the guy that was doing Salvation Army. They went over to one side of the store, the Salvation Army came over to the other side. So, you know, it wasn't like I was taking up their space. They didn't have enough anyway. The store didn't have room for them. And so this is all going to come out on the 4th of February, January.
That's when you go to arraignment at 8:30 in the morning, right?
Right. And I understand that... It takes about 6 months, and they're usually settled out of court, and there's a lot of them going on right now. It's really a bad situation.
Right, although you're first going to have to deal with your trespass ticket, which is the first thing that's going to hit the court, and that'll be an arraignment on at 8:30 for David. If anybody is interested in coming to this case, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or if you want to comment on air, ask David any questions about what happened. The phone number to call is 427-3772, though he may want to reserve some of his judgments because he is facing a misdemeanor charge, which is up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine, for essentially, it looks like to me, doing a First Amendment petitioning activity in a public place that's protected behavior. So I guess the next question I have, David, is once you got into that van, was it a van or a car? Was it a patrol car? Or
patrol car.
You were taken to jail, and how did the police treat you? Want to talk about that a bit?
They treated me with total respect, because from the time they put the handcuffs on and did not give me my Miranda rights, which I understand is not even in use anymore, but they did try to get me to open up on it and ask me questions, so there might be some...
Total respect or total disrespect?
They gave me some respect, because as soon as I got handcuffed and put in the car, I didn't say a word. They started asking me questions and where I lived and all this stuff, and I wouldn't even say a word. I stayed in jail for 3 or 4 hours.
But you showed them your ID.
I had to get my ID before I even...
Right.
Before I was even...
Well, any questions after that seem to me to be inappropriate by the police, and particularly if they ask you questions about what you're doing, which can be used in the prosecution against you, they need to Mirandize you when that happens.
Exactly.
And they did not do that. Now, they don't have to say... They don't have to give you a Miranda warning unless they're interrogating you. That's the deal that I think you were saying, that we talk about the Miranda kind of disappearing, although there's also a court case coming before the Supreme Court. That's those of you out there maybe aware of this, where they're going to try to throw out the whole Miranda requirements for just a consideration about whether a, quote, confession is voluntary, quote, unquote. But that hasn't yet been decided. What's now the case is that if you are arrested by a police officer and you say, I don't want to talk to you, they have an obligation not to ask you questions. Now, I think that you were trying to take things one step further and just not talk to them at all, right?
Well, I didn't know what my rights were, because I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't know what they were going to do with the information. So I just simply didn't answer any questions, even when they wanted me to sign for my belongings. The nurse came out because I wouldn't answer. She wanted to know if I had any medical histories or any problems. I wouldn't answer any questions.
Which is your right, by the way.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then they put me in a cell inside the center of the jail near the control station, a little kind of closet with a window. and just let me sit in there with a pair of pants and a t-shirt, and I was freezing to death for about 3 hours. And they kept coming in and trying to ask me questions, and I wouldn't answer. And they said, well, you're not going to leave the jail until you answer these questions, so you might as well do that. And I still wouldn't answer. And finally, after three or four hours of that, they finally came in and said, well, you know, we have everything to book you. We do have everything to book you.
They had it 4 hours before when you gave AD.
Exactly. They had everything to book me, but he said, I do have to know if you're going to sign the paperwork if we do get it already. Mm-hmm. And then I did open up and say, I'll sign it. And that's the only thing I said when I was in jail. So hopefully that's going to work for me.
So all you folks out there are considering the defense of take me to a magistrate, which David here didn't use, which has been discussed on the station. This is the kind of example you really need to follow, which is you don't make any statements to the police, and you don't sign anything, and they eventually have to release you because they do. That defense, of course, is based on if you're picked up for an infraction that doesn't involve.
What's your meter too?
Well, it doesn't involve a crime against another person, a vehicle code crime, so-called vehicle code crime. If you're talking about a penal code section like trespass, I don't think you can use it in the same fashion, though perhaps you can. That's a whole different issue, which we can talk about at some other point. So David here, as I understand it, was picked up for refusing to, you were asked to leave the entire Kmart area, right? Not just that particular spot. You were asked to go to Safeway, but to leave the whole Kmart property, correct?
I think they wanted me to move away from the main entrance down further between Safeway and Kmart, or he suggested Safeway. So I wasn't pliable, you know.
Right. You wanted to stay where you were. Interesting case, and if people want to pursue it further, I suggest January 4th, 2000. Wow, it comes hard to say. In the courts, you just go and look for the record for... do you mind if I give your last name on this, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
If you want, whatever you feel comfortable doing, or you can call 423-HUFF, and I will give more information to those of you who want that to follow that case specifically. And if you have any remarks on this and you want to talk on air, we are opening up our lines, 427-3772. David, any more comments?
Not about the homeless. I could say a few things about what's going on, but this is pretty good to be able to even talk about the police, what they did to me yesterday. I think everybody should open up anytime they're approached by the police illegally and come to this place and talk about it. And
you mean our radio station here?
Yes. I think it's, you know, this isn't to do with homeless. It has to do with First Amendment rights. And there's actually a very excellent radio station who's fighting Second Amendment and First Amendment rights right now that I listen to sometimes. It's at 7 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night.
What is that?
And that's free K-Free, K-F-R-E. What's the number on that? 940 AM. And the man who runs it is an ex-redneck cop, military guy who is just can't believe that all the work that he did in law enforcement is being destroyed by what's going on today, and he's really trying to make up for what he did. And his name is Larry Pierce, and he's called a radio detective, and he's bringing out all sorts of stuff on First Amendment and Second Amendment rights, and real professionals are coming in and talking on his radio. There's a man who worked under Clinton who can tell you things about Clinton that would just make you want to move to another country.
You mean Bombs Away Bill Clinton?
No. His own half-brother, we came out, his own half-brother said he had a nose like a Hoover, you know. I mean, things like this. Child molestation, him and Hillary. Chelsea's probably not even the daughter of...
And Bill, if you're listening, feel free to call in to refute these allegations. But again, I'm going to return us to homeless topics. Is there more you want to say? And, of course, topics of police misconduct. Anything else you want to say and any of that stuff?
No, and I appreciate you letting me do my little spiel today, and I'll try to keep you informed of what's going on in the homeless field there.
Hey, thank you, David.
Thank you, Robert.
I appreciate that. Well, we haven't been doing too many musical breaks lately, and I'm going to try to implement a small change in that policy. We'll do a little bit of music from Peggy Seeger, and then we'll be coming back to you.
I don't want the boy with the long brown hair. I don't want the one with the curls. I want Jimmy and the devil may care, and Jimmy's good with the girls. He took the girl with the long brown hair. He took the one with the curls. He took me and the devil may care, and Jimmy's good with the girls. Come and walk in the autumn woods, come and walk in town. She walked with him to the end of the earth, and together they lay down.